It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It is time once again to step into the Coming Out Lounge. And today, we're going to go into a story about a military guy who had a secret. One that caused him to, well, let's just say question his values, kept him up at night, caused him to pretend to be someone he wasn't. Kind of sounds familiar, right? Yet, guess what? He did his duty. He lived by the expectations of others. He served his country until he just couldn't do it any longer. Again, sounds kind of familiar, right? But what we're talking about is from hiding his truth to the music of his soul, he finally came out and he came clean. But guess what? This isn't a story about a guy coming out and saying, okay, I'm gay and or bisexual and a guy in the military. Instead, what he's coming clean about is his own convictions and his truth. So I'm going to let you know, listeners, that this is a coming out story that will, well, it's going to surprise you when we finally get to what this is all about, because it's going to intrigue you as we go through the journey with my guest, James Newcomb, about the military music man who finally is letting the song of his consciousness out of the closet in order to really, truly free him into being fully self-expressed as the guy he's meant to be. And with that, I'm going to bring James onto the microphone with me and say, welcome to the Coming Out Lounge, man. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Rick. I have to say that I am the subject of this story, and I am intrigued by that intro.
Well... You know, I get that quite a bit, and I guess it's the marketing guy in me that I always write my intros like, is it okay, if I'm selling this show, how would I sell it? So there you go, man. I am for hire. So, you know, as a fellow podcaster, yeah. So, hey, thanks for that. No, I love writing the intros because it's just fun. It's fun to go kind of back to my roots of being that marketing branding guy and go, okay, let's write some copy here that's fun. So let's kind of start in kind of, well, you're a music guy, right? That's kind of where some of this started, and you're also a military guy. So take us into your world, man. I mean, you were in the military for how many years?
My military career began in 1994, right out of high school.
Yep.
And I did 4 years. I was a musician. I'm a trumpet player. Mm-hmm. And so that 4 years came and went. No event, nothing that had anything to do with me being a conscientious objector. Mm-hmm. It was, I just did the time, 4 years, and it was time to leave, and I left. 10 years later, this is in 2008, I've now been out of the Army for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I've been a civilian, been around the block time or two, had some hard times, had some, you know, experienced, you know, sometimes the harsh realities of life.
Yep.
At least life in the first world as we know it. But just became a little more educated, a little more aware of current events, politics, some of the way that things operate on the international scene. Mm-hmm. And so I re-entered the military as a musician. Mm-hmm. And that was my number one goal in life, was to be a trumpet player. Wanted to be a professional trumpet player. And this provided an opportunity to do what I know I was put on the earth to do. Mm-hmm. And get paid for it. But again, I was a little more educated. So this time I went into the military with some reservations, mm-hmm. with, you know, some, how would you say it? Some, I guess just some concerns.
Okay.
About foreign policy, about war. And time went on. It went okay, I guess, for a little while. I guess my conscience became what is known as crystallized. It became a little more hardened towards the anti-war stance and the anti-war mentality. And I had just re-enlisted for 6 years.
Wow.
Which is a long time.
Yep.
To commit to anything.
Yep.
Even if you like it.
Exactly.
And a year into this 6 year commitment, I just hit a brick wall and I realized, man, I made a horrible mistake. Mm-hmm. I've just made a terrible mistake. And I remember very clearly walking into the office of the sergeant major. If you're not familiar with military terminology, it's the highest ranking enlisted man in the unit. Mm. And I just walked into his office, said, I need to talk to you. I closed the door. I just laid all my cards on the table. I said, I believe that war is wrong. I believe that the way that the U.S. military is used around the world is wrong. And I simply cannot continue with my role as a musician, even if it's a non-combat role. I simply cannot do it. I feel like I am contributing to something that I find morally objectionable. And it was then that he said, well, James, it sounds to me like you're a conscientious objector, which was a term that I had heard, but only in the context of like a Vietnam draft era type of thing, because the military is, there's no draft, there's no conscription, so you don't hear of that very much. And so he said, I recommend that you file to be a conscientious objector. And so that's, so I took his recommendation, went home and told my wife about this, who, not to discredit her or anything, but she was very concerned because the military allows a certain degree of security.
Sure.
With the 1st and 15th of every month, you're getting paid. And wives tend to like that.
Yeah.
They have what's called a security gland.
Yeah.
So she objected to my objection. She wanted no part of it. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself in a great dilemma of being in a situation where I had this job that I found to be a violation of my conscience. Mm-hmm. And then my wife, who was, not to put her in a negative light, but she was accusing me of not providing for the family. Mm. I'm trying to put her in the best possible light.
Sure. No, understood.
So what I did was, there's two ways that you can leave the military as a conscientious objector. One is to leave outright, like you go through the process, which takes a number of months, and then it gets approved and you're out. No strings attached. You're total. The cord is severed. And that is one way. And then the other way is to be labeled as a conscientious objector, but serve the remaining time on your contract. And so I chose the latter at that time. This was in North Carolina. And I realized that this process, it was going to take so long, it was going to interfere with my upcoming move to Korea. And I thought, instead of adding to what is already sort of a tumultuous relationship in my house, I'm going to withdraw the application, and then I will move to Korea as planned. And then when the time is right in Korea, I will resubmit the application. So that's what I did, withdrew it, moved to Korea in September of 2013, and it was August of 2014 that I resubmitted the application. Only this time, my beliefs had crystallized even further, where it was just being in a military environment, and I'm going to explain more about this later, but just being in that environment was just, it was just complete opposite of my own personal beliefs, my own values. And I just decided I just cannot do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so I put in an application and didn't tell my wife to be discharged from the military as a conscientious objector immediately. And so to make a very long and boring story short, but still boring, the process took forever. People lost paperwork. Deadlines were missed. And not by a few days, by, we're talking 6 months, they were, there's a certain protocol to follow with a conscientious objector application. And to sum up, nothing was done right. No one took the time to do a Google search and say, how do I do this? It was just absolute apathy, indifference to just to getting this done.
Wow.
And all this time, I'm going to this job that the job itself I couldn't stand. But then on top of that, I have this moral dilemma, and it just became very difficult. I became irritable. I began to act out in ways that in normal circumstances I wouldn't. I began to react to situations in a very, very negative way. And I just decided I can't continue like this. This is a bad way to go.
You know, it's so interesting as you're talking, James. There's been so many parallels that I've been listening to that parallel someone who's in the closet coming out to say, I'm gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. In fact, what you just mm-hmm. said, that this acting out in ways that's so not who you are is right. really, really common. You know,
well, that's why I heard about your show. And I remember thinking through this process, this must be what it's like to come out as a homosexual.
Yes. It's very, very similar. You're hiding stuff. You're acting in ways you don't want to act. There's like this internal moral piece of, you know, I'm not being truthful. I'm hiding. I'm not being who I'm meant to be. It's not aligning with my value system. And that's why I was so quiet, because I just wanted to let all this begin to start to play out. Because I think what's beautiful about what we're doing here on the Coming Out Lounge and is really starting to show these uncloseted stories of people that are living other lives that have nothing, not a damn thing to do with sexuality, but yet we're so similar in our journeys. I mean, everything you've said so far, I could put the metaphor over the coming out experience. And, you know, everything from issues with family to, you know, standing there in front of someone and saying, this is where I stand. And, you know, all those things. I mean, even in those moments as you went to your sergeant major and stood there and shared this, it had to be almost like, oh, my God, I would anticipate you didn't really know what to expect. And you were probably shaking in your boots, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought this could end very badly, mm-hmm. but I just had to do it, you know.
So take us further into the story. You go ahead and you file. You didn't tell your wife. So where did this next step in Korea take you?
Well, I ended up telling my wife a month after I did it. Mm-hmm. And just for context, the normal process for this is 8 to 9 months from the time you do the paperwork to the time you get the decision and you're out.
Wow. Like
8 to 9 months. And so just to use that as a frame of reference, one of the milestone, I guess you'd call it a milestone step of the process, is to have what's called a hearing where it's my opportunity to state my case in front of an officer who doesn't give a rat's ass about me or anything that I believe in. And he makes the determination or he makes the recommendation. Yes, he's sincere. Mm-hmm. This thing took 9 months from the time that I submitted the application. Yes. So it's supposed to happen within 90 days and it took 9 months. And all this while, I'm still have this dilemma. And then a few months after the hearing, again, things got lost. Things made its way, finally got to the Pentagon. And then there was a piece of paperwork missing and they sent it back. And so now I'm still waiting and waiting and months and months and months. And one time in particular, I was given an assignment to drive a bus, which is something that I did as a secondary duty. Mm-hmm. And there was a problem with the dispatch, or there was just a problem, and it was a very frustrating experience for me. And I just had a meltdown right in this, I guess it's a motor pool type mm-hmm. of building. Just had a meltdown, and I used profanity. I wasn't talking to anyone in particular, but it was just sort of a boiling over point. And so the natural reaction on the part of my chain of command was to punish me because of this. This was during an exercise that's a simulated war with North Korea. And the reaction of my chain of command was to send me to this exercise. And so it's this simulated war situation. There was actually fire between North and South Korea, not where we were, but it was right on the border. And I know I was literally less than 2 miles away from the North Korea border. So here I am in this situation. The morning I wake up and I'm supposed to go, I just have this awful feeling in my gut saying this should not be. This is just isn't right. It just was not sitting well with me. I called the person who is fairly high up in the chain of command, and I just said, I have to talk to you. I can't do this. I just cannot do this. This is not right for me to go to this situation. Mm-hmm. Was met with deaf ears. It was in one ear, out the other. There I went to this exercise. I got through it okay. Mm-hmm. But then I came back from this exercise and just had some time to sort of process things. And I just realized I'm like a slave, man. Like even slaves are allowed to have a conscience. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I was just told your conscience doesn't matter. And you're going to go anyway, because I say so. And so what I did was I just had to get away. Mm-hmm. I had to go get out of Korea. I went to Taiwan, where my friend was staying, and I didn't go through the necessary channels to get permission to go to Taiwan, which is what you're supposed to do in the army. You're supposed to get a pass and the form authorizing you to leave. And I just left and I didn't do it. And I got back from Taiwan. And I didn't intend to turn myself in when I went. It wasn't like, okay, I'm just going to go do this and then turn myself in. But then I got back and I realized, you know what? This would do the job. I tried to do it the right way, and look where that got me. Yeah. And I'm not saying that that was the right reaction, but sure, that's just what I did. And so that, they reacted very swift. I was out of the army 90 days after I turned myself in with that.
But what you just went through, again, is another parallel that we've, you know, most people who listen to this podcast, or if you're first tuning in, you may not have heard of this, but conversion therapy is something that's been tried many, many times to very little success. In fact, no success from, in most cases, for LGBTQ people. And so in essence, it's kind of the same thing. You were being sent to this experience in a way of punishment and to fix you or all these different things. And yet you knew the morning that you woke up that this just wasn't right. And I've had some people on the podcast, and I have friends who've been through the conversion therapy experience, and they've all had a very similar thing happen for them where, you know, as they're going through this each day, they're like, this isn't who I am. This isn't working. This isn't what I should be having to go through. And their own consciousness is saying this, shouting in their heads of, but this isn't at all who I am. I am who I am, plain and simple. And I find this, again, really fascinating how similar this experience is to something that somebody who's in the closet being forced to kind of go do something because somebody else says, this is going to fix you, or this is what you need to go through. And then oftentimes what happens is they go and retreat. They can retreat by leaving the experience. They can retreat by running away. I know in our youth culture in the LGBTQ community, the youth tend to run away a lot. In fact, one of the statistics that is very prevalent within our society right now is estimated 60 to 70% of all homeless youth on the streets are LGBTQ youth. That's a huge percentage. And again, it's so interesting to me that here you go off to Taiwan, it's kind of like, here's your escape, and then you come back. So you have taken these steps, you've gone through, and you come back. So I'm assuming that somewhere along the way in the next year or so is when everything truly began to unravel.
Well, the process of leaving the army was very quick after I turned myself in.
Okay.
I mean, it was, I think I got reduced in rank and was given some extra duty, which if you're not familiar with that term, it means exactly what it sounds like, extra, not necessary.
Yep.
It's just to be a big pain in the ass. But I did that. It was, I think it was like 6 weeks of raking leaves. And then it was about 2 weeks after that was finished that I was paperwork in hand, out of uniform, on a plane back to the United States. So the things that they want to take seriously and they want to do quickly, they can do it. Yep. And getting people in trouble is something that they take seriously. Mm. Unfortunately, someone wanting to follow his conscience is not one of those things.
Interesting.
At least in this situation.
Sure. So now let's flip to what I would consider the other side of this closet door. You hid in the closet as a conscientious objector. You came out about it. You said what you needed to do. And then now on the other side, you're no longer in the military. You're headed home. And what has this done for you in your life to be finally open and out about how you feel and who you are in the world?
Well, I guess the first thing that I think of is that it gave me a really thick skin. Mm-hmm. I just am not as concerned with what people think of me anymore. Being that exposed, it was just like I just made myself completely vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Now, in my new career as an entrepreneur and as a podcaster, I really don't give a rip what people think of me. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of something that has progressed even in the year I've been out. I've just reached a point where it's like, you know what? This is who I am, and I'm going to present myself based on who I am and on my experiences. And I know that there are going to be people who disagree with me, but I know that they will respect me for being me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll bet that's another parallel.
It is a very big parallel. And that's where a lot of people, well, this is where a lot of people get really hung up, is they can't let go of that piece of needing the approval. And right. they can't get past the piece of, if somebody doesn't respect you, then that's not your issue. It's theirs. And mm-hmm. I work so much with people in this arena, whether they're coming out of the closet about their sexuality or they're coming out saying, I want to get out of my damn corporate job, or I want to, you know, I want to come out that I realize I'm overweight and I finally want to quit hanging out with other people that are overweight who drag me down, and they finally come to these realizations. There's going to be moments when you're going to lose some people. Yeah. If you lose them, it has nothing to do with you 99.9% of the time. It has everything to do with them. It's either jealousy. It's either they've got a completely different value belief system that they just cannot be a part of this. It can be that they just are so angry that somehow whatever you're doing is affecting their life, when most of the time it isn't anything that you're doing that they're letting it affect their life. But yeah, you're right. This is a huge parallel. People get really hung up in this arena. And the two biggest things I work probably the most with is helping people learn to let go of others' expectations and not to, you know, not to be offended by what people think. You said it really well. You know, you come through this and you learn to have some really thick skin. Yeah. That's the biggest piece. You know, it's the toughest lessons too, because we're so wired as human beings to, you know, want this approval and want to have the interaction. And I think too often we get stuck in that, well, if this is who I am, I'm going to lose all of that. And I think that would be the third piece that I do a lot of work with people on is, you're going to lose the people who you need to lose. And once you realize that, those that stick with you and those that come into your life that are okay with who you are, those are your blessings and your gifts.
Yeah. And for everyone that you lose, you'll gain another person that
absolutely
is supposed to be, you know, in your camp.
It is. So as you've been doing your stuff and building your business, so let's talk a little bit about your podcast. It's called Musicpreneur, right?
Yep.
Talk a little bit about what that, I love it, but I don't want to do it in my words. I want to hear it from James's own words, what this podcast is all about and the kind of work you're trying to do in the world to serve others.
Well, I guess the title is pretty much self-explanatory. Yep. It's Entrepreneurship for Musicians. Mm-hmm. And I just want to preach the gospel of health, wealth, and happiness for musicians who want to make a buck with their craft. And not just make a buck, but really sort of discover what they're supposed to do, you know, what their own unique, authentic contribution can be to not just music, but to the world, and how they can use their own gift as a musician to improve the world and make the world a halfway decent place. So, yeah, it's...
Well, I imagine based on what I know about this, because so James and I are in a group program together right now where we're working on our businesses and stuff. And this is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for all entrepreneurs. We all come into this world. We want to do something great. We want to have impact. We want to make money. And then there's that weird thing that suddenly the abundance piece in them. And I know I'm living proof of this, folks. It is one of those things that I love doing so much what I do that I have to be really careful, because I can be the guy that just gives it away. But there's nothing wrong with making money and having abundance. And I think for those creative types, this is where you're so involved and so excited by what you do as a creative person that you may have the tendency to go, yeah, okay, well, I'll do this. And then you don't make any money doing it. That's why I like what you're doing, James. It is that beautiful intersection between the creativity and the business environment of, we all want to do what we want to do, but there's no harm in making money doing what you do.
Yeah. The thing about music is, like, even if you don't get paid, you're going to do it.
Right.
So
right.
If you're going to do it, why not make a presentation? Why not make a product that can make you some money?
Absolutely. And the parallel here that I drew as you were first starting to talk about what you do is having this impact as a musician in the world is very similar to realizing that who you are as a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender person in the world, you have an impact too. And it doesn't have to be the negative impact that gets talked about so much. There's beauty in being a beacon of light in the world as someone who is not the heteronormative. I think we're called to this as all of us are called in different ways. But if we deny this piece of ourselves of who we are, then we're not living our purpose on the earth. We've been given this opportunity to say, okay, I'm a gay guy. And had anybody, and people have heard me say this numerous times on the show, but I'm going to bring it into this discussion because I think it's very poignant. If somebody had said to me back in 1999, when I was coming out of the closet, that I would be doing this show and having this podcast, I would have said, you're crazy because I don't even understand myself. But it's interesting how when I started to come very clean about who I am and what I wanted to be doing and how I wanted to show up in the world, this has become one of my favorite pieces of who Rick is and what I've been put on the planet to do, is these interviews and bringing the parallels into play like we've done today of sharing this. And so just like a music person who's creative has something to give to the world, I want to encourage everyone who's listening, whether you're gay or not, doesn't matter. But I know a lot of the audience is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Realize that's part of your gift to the world. Take it, use it, find a way that you being who you are is a gift. It may be that one person meets you, and because they had that dialogue with you and what it's like to be in your shoes as that person, they have a better understanding of how to show up in the world themselves. And I think, again, James, that's where there's the parallel of what you and I do. We're both encouraging people to show up in the world to really share their gifts in beautiful ways.
Very well said.
Yeah. What's the big goal for Musicpreneur in the next? I know it's just kicked off. What would be the big goal for you with it in the next year? What would you like to see it really become?
I want it to be a resource. I want it to be like one of the hubs that musicpreneurs go to get inspired, to get the tools, techniques, tactics, occasional tough love to make it happen. Yeah. I've got the podcast. I blog regularly. Mm-hmm. Part of the podcast is an audio blog, which is just me going solo, starting a mastermind called Half Steps to Success. If you're a musician, then you get the significance. Yeah. But if you're not, a half step is the smallest interval on the chromatic scale, like piano, the black and white, that's a half step. So it's the smallest interval. So Half Steps to Success is in the works. I have a ebook that I'm currently putting the finishing touches on, and it'll probably be available by the time this podcast airs.
Yeah.
It's called Everything I Really Need to Know as an Entrepreneur. I Learned Playing Music. As you can tell, I've been busy.
You have been busy. And it's so exciting to see this because there's not, I haven't seen a whole lot of other podcasts out there quite like this one, where you're mixing some really beautiful, you know, differences and bringing them to light for people who could really use it. So it's just awesome. Just fantastic. So one of the things I always do at the end of the podcast is, you know, you've given some very beautiful, realistic, honest truths about the parallels of coming out to be who you are. And how they, you know, we've shown how they parallel the coming out journey. If you were to leave our listeners with a piece of advice about, you know, really stepping out and taking that stand, what would you love to leave the listeners with as we close out the show today?
You know, the important thing at the end of the day is that you are authentic. And sometimes the process of discovering your authentic self is it takes quite a bit of time to discover the layers of falsehood that you've accumulated over the years through your childhood, through the expectations of society. But there's nothing more liberating. There's nothing that brings more joy into my soul than knowing that I'm doing what I was meant to do.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing like it.
And I love that piece because I think this is where we hear a lot of, you know, buzzwords like authenticity and self-expression and transparency and all that stuff. But I think when we can take that to heart and soul and really take it into that soul, our soul is the thing. I believe our soul is the thing that guides us. It's that intuition and everything. When we can really tap back into it. Yes, it may be scary to come out and be who you are, but when you can tap into it from the soul level, you've just come back into who you are. That's all it is. You've just stepped back into alignment with it. And there is so much beauty when you can be who you're meant to be. Sure, you still have trials, you still have challenges, but you're actually doing it from a place of the real you versus the you that's trying to keep everybody else happy. And that's such a huge difference. James, I want to say thanks so much for this, because I love how we're starting to twist new stuff into the Coming Out Lounge, which at some point in the very near future, we're going to be changing it up a little bit, because we want to tell more of these stories. We're going to be changing it up. I'm not going to disclose exactly how we're changing it yet, but stay tuned, listeners. We're going to be bringing you even more stories that are twists on the coming out experience. James is just a really beautiful example of how much more similar we are than different. So thanks again, buddy, for being here today. I really appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And just to let you know, my website is musicpreneur.com. Yep. Love to hear from you. And thanks for having me.
Hey, absolutely, man. We're going to have all of James' contact information on his site. And like he said, by the time this one airs, hopefully he'll have the ebook. We'll get a link on that for you all. Just check him out, especially if you know someone who's in the music business, or you're an aspiring musician, you're thinking, I'd really like to make this my life work. Go listen to some of the beautiful stuff he's doing on his podcast. You will not be disappointed. I promise you that. So, and with that, I think we're going to call it a wrap here on another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your most powerful truth. Take care, everyone. Hey, 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 Closet Dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners, I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.